SB Nation Radio here on 106.7 The Fan. Scott Jackson, Mike Prado with you. Give us a follow on Twitter at SB Nation Radio, and check us out on Facebook and like us on the SB Nation Radio fan page. All right, now our pleasure to bring in from SB Nation DC, he is Jack Anderson, covers the Redskins, and this week wrote about Clinton Portis's legacy. How are you doing today, Jack?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We are doing good.
We're doing good. The first question we have to ask you, because it's a bit of a cliche question when you talk about Clinton Portis, who is your favorite Clinton Portis character? I like Southeast Jerome myself.
I'm a Dolomite Jenkins guy, Napoleon Dynamite's, our generation's pop culture phenomenon, I guess you could say. And anytime you got to vote for Pedro, vote for Portis, it's fine with me, you know.
What about, I kind of thought Sheriff Gonna Get You was a little bit underrated, too. I don't know.
They were all, he had a knack that year, especially in 2005, for just coming up with the most classic characters.
Yeah.
The guy was just, unreal with that, unreal on the field as well.
What's interesting is that the first question we are asking is about Clinton Portis's characters, and he was a very good player here. The first question I'm kind of curious about is, you talk about his legacy, were all those wacky kind of things that he did, and even when they spilled over to kind of things that were not so good for the team, and as far instead of kind of distractions, were all those things almost distracting to what he was able to actually accomplish on the field?
To a point, I would say that's possible. I think when you saw two different sides of Portis. When he came here with Joe Gibbs, he quickly learned, Joe Gibbs is a guy he was going to put it all on the line for. And, Joe Gibbs had that tendency to, bring the best out of players. And I think Joe Gibbs welcomes characters, a little controversy to the locker room, courteous and as classy as Joe Gibbs is, I don't think he minds having a little bit of edge and bite to the locker room. And the fact that Portis was able to do that amidst, a huge five-game winning streak in 2005, I think that really brought the team together. Now, on the other side of things, that shtick can only last so long, especially, only as long as a player plays well. And Portis, as we all know, after his first couple seasons in D.C., he accumulates 695 carries over his first 2 years. He's the total workhorse back for Joe Gibbs. Then he, has a shoulder injury in preseason in 2006 and, breaks his hand midway through 2006. And after that, injuries started to pile up on this guy. And as, his performance, decreased on the field, I think, there was less tolerance for that, zany Portis we saw off the field. And that's a big reason why I think, fans started to question, Portis's character. He calls out Jim Zorn, saying he's a genius and, mocking him as a genius. And, all those things just add up. When the player's not playing well and the team's not playing well, which the Redskins didn't play very well after Joe Gibbs left, that's when Clinton Portis's legacy comes into question, I think.
It's funny because he's not the only athlete in this town that where you could say stuff like that about, where they were so colorful and then we loved it for so long. I mean, the top two examples I have are, Gilbert Arenas and then now the Nationals, Niger Morgan. They're very similar. They're funny, they're colorful, but as soon as you start to not bring it, it's like the same things that made you great, so funny are now such terrible things.
It is funny. I mean, Portis is a guy that in terms of that, funniness and everything, he was able, like I said, to overcome it. In the first couple of years, he's able to overcome his, zany nature by producing on the field. And it just goes to show you, if you're not winning, it doesn't matter really what you do. You're going to be, under scrutiny. You're going to be criticized, like Portis was towards the end of his career here. And, no disrespect to Portis because, he did give it all on the field. He was a complete back. Enough can't be said about the fact that he was willing to be a great pass blocker, he relished it.
Oh, yeah.
And, that's something that's hard to find out there. And we even saw that after, he suffers a concussion and, he's criticized for avoiding contact, especially in that Rams game when he just, took a dive. Toady-like dive right there. I mean, that was just, ridiculous. And when you see stuff like that and you call into question his character, at the same time you knew that, it just his time had come in terms of he just wasn't willing to take the contact anymore. Like he said, he had lost some of his fire playing football after Sean Taylor died and Coach Gibbs left. And, that all adds up to the fact that, Portis had a couple of great seasons in D.C. He had four 1,000-yard campaigns, but, after the first two campaigns, I think you really saw a guy that flamed out and didn't quite live up to his potential.
We're here with Jack Anderson, SB Nation DC, with us here on SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson, Mike Prater here on 106.7, the fan time of Clinton Portis, as he's released this week by the Washington Redskins. Well, and the other thing, too, Jack, and this was going on even during the successful years, we were hearing whispers that this was not a guy that was putting in the work in the offseason with the rest of his teammates, wasn't working out in town, and was taking shortcuts. And he never had the explosiveness he had in Denver. We saw it actually on his first carry. And that was really it. I mean, that was the big carry when he was here, that was a highlight carry. But we were just teased because we never saw that guy that was, getting 5-plus yards a carry in Denver and scoring those big touchdowns. And I think that's the other thing that people kind of grew tired of when they started, hearing about that stuff and finding out that, the Redskins also kind of allowed him to have this back door to management and, circumvent fines and other things other players were being given. I think that's the other thing that soured a lot of folks on Clinton Portis, too.
I would agree with you on that. Coming over from Denver, first playing in Denver, he starts out, he plays 13 games his rookie year, rushes for over 1,500 yards and 5.5 yards per carry. Then he duplicates that performance in 16 games the next year. You can't help but be excited when you acquire a guy like that. And that's something that kind of did Clinton Portis in from the start, because the expectations were so high. People forgot the shelf life for a running back, especially when you're piling, over 2,200 carries on a guy. He's just not gonna give you that production, consistent production across the board. You can't expect a running back in, 7-8 seasons to give you 1,500 yards every single season, especially when you're giving them the ball as much as you give Portis. So Portis comes over from Denver with he comes into Denver with a huge chip on his shoulder. He felt he should have been drafted number 3 to the Lions. He went number 51. So obviously a guy with Portis's, confidence is not going to take that and run with it. He wants to be the guy that everybody looks at as the star. So he comes to D.C. in a mega deal. The expectations are through the roof, and he put on weight to, fit Joe Gibbs' system. Obviously, there's questions about, when he stopped, giving it his all in off-season workouts and stuff like that. And once he ended up playing with the Redskins, he definitely lost some of that burst. Maybe it was because of the weight he did put on. But, yeah, we never quite saw the Clinton Portis that we saw in Denver his first 2 years.
It's interesting because Portis was number 2 as the all-time rusher with the Redskins. He didn't break John Riggins' record. It's unclear whether he really wanted to or whether that was important to him. Both those guys were both very colorful running backs as far as their personalities. And yet I sense that Riggins, probably because he won a Super Bowl, but maybe for other reasons, is much...
Totally because he won a Super Bowl.
All right, fine. But just roll with my premise here.
Okay, go ahead.
Riggins will be much more beloved going forward than Clinton Portis was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Was it really all about winning? Was there something else there?
All about winning. The character stuff's great, but if he was a bad player, nobody would have cared, like you guys had touched on before. But somebody who watched John Riggins in his heyday here, the dude would be vomiting on the sidelines and come back out and continue to carry the load, and everybody knew he was going to get the football, and it didn't matter. I mean, it's just a different mentality. And, these great playoff runs that Joe Gibbs had in the second go-around, quote-unquote, I'm sorry, wild card runs, really? I mean, give me a break.
But Super Bowl
champion and division winners, and the team that lost the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 18 may have been the greatest team that never won one.
Okay, but the Redskins under Riggins had a lot more talent around Riggins. I mean,
was the heart and soul of
but
the
you
team.
Know what I'm what I'm trying my point yeah. is that if the Redskins had more talent around Portis, like let's say they had a better, better mm-hmm. receivers, better line, better defense, wouldn't Portis still be kind of beloved, a lot more beloved, too? Like, wasn't he a victim of somewhat of circumstance?
Yeah, but he's also the symbol of Dan Snyder, whether he likes it or not, and whether that's fair
well, that's
or not.
What I'm saying.
He's the symbol of what's wrong with Dan Snyder, because he had this back door to do what he wanted to, and pretty much, he called the shots. And, there were some good people here that worked with him that, kind of got hurt in their careers for trying to stand up to him. So,
right.
Ernest Biner, there's some other stuff there, too, that people kind of skate over because he was funny with his costumes too.
But so Jack, I mean, do you buy this premise that at least to a certain extent that Portis was a victim of circumstance?
I do kind of agree with it, because you have to remember in 2004 that was Gibbs's first season, and the offense was, the concern going into the season was, will the offense be 1980s Joe Gibbs, or will he, modify his game for the new NFL? And he really didn't modify his game. He brought in a washed-up quarterback in Mark Brunell, And the offense was anemic, especially in the passing game. They're in the bottom third of the league for that. They lost John Jansen at the beginning of the year in the Hall of Fame game against the Broncos, I believe. And, you know, that's a quality right tackle that you're down, you know, right away before you even start the regular season. And that's a good point because Gibbs, even the next year, if it wasn't for that Monday Night Miracle in Dallas, who knows what would have happened, because Mark Brunell and Patrick Ramsey had shown absolutely no ability to lead, you know, the offense to a you know, respectable amount of points to help Greg Williams' defense out those first 2 years. And so if Santana Moss doesn't catch those two bombs, we might never even be talking about Portis in the discussion with John Riggins at this time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that team, whew, that game saved a lot of things. Saved a lot of people's reputations, there's no doubt, for a little bit longer. But it is interesting, and now as they move forward, Jack, I mean, obviously Ryan Terrain is going to be the guy as long as he can stay on the field. Who else that was left over from last year do you see in that mix, or is it going to be other guys that weren't even around here that are going to be in that mix?
The Redskins have six backs on their roster right now, Ryan Terrain obviously being the number one guy. But the problem with that is, you know, as good as Ryan Terrain looked at times last year, he really ended up, you know, showing a lot of, impatience as a runner. He was one of the leaders in negative rushes, and that was only in playing, you know, 8-9 games. You know, that's another concern. He only played in 8-9 games. Granted, he didn't come in until, you know, 5 weeks into the season, but
sure,
he was injured a couple of times, and he has an injury history. He tore an ACL last year with the Broncos, or sorry, 2 years ago, and then he spent the year out of football. And that's going to be a big concern going forward. They have Keelan Williams behind him. He's signed to a 3-year deal in October. And then behind him you have James Davis, you have Chad Simpson, all these guys that are, you know, your dime a dozen guys who will give you good effort, but their talent level really doesn't match up. And the Redskins have really ignored the running back position, instead, you know, counting on Clinton Portis, Larry Johnson, Willie Parker, guys like that, the last couple of seasons. And then by the end of the year, you see what they're dealing with. They're dealing with James Davis. They're dealing with Quinton Ganther last year, two years ago. And, I mean, you know, that you have to address, I feel you have to address that position, not with a first or second round draft pick necessarily, or with a huge free agent, but you need to bring in another guy that can stay healthy and, you know, has the talent level to match up in the NFL. You need a guy who can pass block, because none of those young guys know how to. That's an underdeveloped skill.
That's a great point. Well, of course, we know that they've talked to Ryan Williams from Virginia Tech already. I'm sure many teams have as well.
I'm sure you'd like that, too, as a Virginia Tech guy.
Right, Ryan Williams, it would be, you know, he's a slashing runner. I'm a huge fan. But honestly, I don't think that'd be necessarily worth a second-round pick, because the guy can't pass block. I'm looking more at a guy like Roy Helu Jr. His stock is rising, so that might be difficult to grab him, considering the Redskins don't have a third or fourth-round pick. But if he falls to the fifth round, the Redskins should really look at this guy. He can pass block pretty well. He's a one-cut runner. He's pretty solid out of Nebraska.
Yeah, he was a stud at Nebraska. Hey, Jack Anderson, thanks so much for your time, buddy, and have a great week.
Hey, definitely. Thank you, guys.
All right, there's Jack Anderson, SB Nation DC, with us. Coming up, we will talk Capitals as we talk to our man from Kings of Leonsis, and also from SB Nation DC. Adam Vingan is going to be with us to discuss the Caps' big moves this week and big dividends so far. So that's coming up next. SB Nation Radio here on 106.7 The Fan.